Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for downloading the latest Leeds Book Club podcast. Great to chat with you all again. And I'm joined tonight by the ever wonderful and fabulous Chris Nixon, our pet author, whom we occasionally allow out to record little bits and pieces like this. But most of the time, we prefer to keep him chained to his typewriter, producing the books that we love. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Niamh.
I hope I didn't undersell you too much there in the introduction.
No. It's, I mean, you know, superb would have been better, but we'll live with wonderful.
You know, next time I let you out of the basement, I'll totally work that word in somewhere. So thank you so much for joining us. I know that you've had a really hectic couple of weeks, and you seem to be bopping up and down the place.
Yeah, in fact, last week I was up in Leeds, doing an event at Oxfam Books in Headingley, and then 2 days after that I was down at Bodies in the Bookshop in Cambridge on a panel there, and that was really great because the panel was held in the debating chamber of Cambridge Union, so I felt very grand.
It sounds very grand.
So it's wonderful because they have these doors both in the gallery upstairs and down in the chamber. One door on either side of the main doors, one says eyes and the other says nose. And it makes you think, oh yeah, this really is a debating chamber.
God, we're so easily amused, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, plus I could just wander down the street to FOP and pick up a Black Keys album for £5 and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, that sounds fantastic. I mean, Cambridge is one of those places I always intend to visit because in my head it's suffused with this immense literary atmosphere, you know. Is it like that at all, or is it just like...
It was jam-packed with tourists, most of them Japanese, to be honest. I'd done the event a couple of years before, and my son had come down with me as he did this time, and we kind of did Cambridge then, so we didn't need to really do it again, and we had better weather 2 years ago as well, so that that helped. But no, it was still fun to be down there. And with them having panels this year, it was a really great event. I got to know a little bit. The author was sitting next to me, a fellow called Peter Moore, who has a non-fiction book about a murder in rural Worcestershire at the start of the 19th century that I definitely want to read. And he and I bonded over music journalism, so it was... That was really nice.
Oh, that's brilliant when you find somebody that you share a particular interest with and then you discover you've got all of these other little things in common as well. I love that.
Well, yeah, and one of his ambitions is to write a biography of Elliot Smith. So when he learned that I spent 20 years living in the Pacific Northwest and worked as a music journalist there, wow, his eyes just lit up. He said, oh, do you know people there? And I'm like, yeah. So it was, you know, maybe... we can help each other out somehow, which would be really great.
I mean, this is one of the things that, like, virtually, I think Twitter is so good at. You manage to find these kindred spirits all around the world and develop a community. Across Leeds, there have been so many people that have, you know, given me advice and helped me out with the blogging and book clubbing and setting up various bits and pieces. And, you know, obviously I try and help out in whatever way I can as well. And you really feel like we're all on the same team, if you know what I mean. It's a lovely feeling.
Twitter's really good as a community, I think. And you develop sort of micro-communities within that.
Mm.
You know, groups of friends you talk with during the day and stuff like that. And it's... for that, it's much better than Facebook or any of the other social networks, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think Google Plus has a lot of potential, but I'm personally just terribly over the Facebook thing. I only use it on my phone now for the book club, because every time I log on the web, I'm lost instantly. It's just gotten so big, so I can't navigate myself around it anymore.
I use Facebook quite a bit. For me, it's a good way of keeping in touch with friends who are scattered all over the globe. So I think of it as a hub for that.
And I
use it, although I have a page for my writing on there, I use Facebook more to keep in touch with music friends.
Yeah.
And Twitter, you know, for banter and stuff like that.
Oh, be honest. You just like to brag. Every morning when I wake up, I look at my Twitter stream, and about 2 hours before I've woken up, you're like, morning Twitter, I've got 2 hours of writing behind me. You just do that to make the rest of us feel inadequate.
I just tend to wake early, that's all.
Oh, fine. Be reasonable. What have you got lined up then in the next... I believe you've got a book coming out now next month.
Hello? Yes, I do.
Yes. Oh.
Yeah, are you still there?
Yeah, I am indeed. I can hear you, obviously.
Okay. Yes, I have a book coming out, a new book coming out at the end of August, August 30th, called Come the Fear. And it's the fourth in the Richard Nottingham series. And I think, personally, it's the best one so far.
I mean, I'm as you know, I'm three books in and obviously addicted. And if anybody doesn't know what we're on about, if you head to the blog, Chris has his own page and a couple of short stories are up there as well as reviews, I think, of the first three books. And I mean, I'm a huge Richard Nottingham fan. So like, if you're saying you think it's the best book, I feel like the bar is pretty high there. But I also think that if the first three books, in a way, it's kind of like there was an arc running through them that seems to have concluded. I don't want to give too much away, but I'm sure you know what I mean, that there are some significant changes, you know, that change the landscape for Richard.
Well, it does, very much so. And I was very conscious of that when I started writing this one. And it's, I mean, there's things I certainly learned from the first three. And the third book, without giving much away again, takes Richard Nottingham a bit out of Leeds into the villages up towards Horsforth and Rounday. And this fourth one puts him very, very firmly back in the centre of Leeds and keeps him there.
And I mean, we've discussed before how Leeds almost takes on the role of a character within the books. It's very vibrant, you know, and obviously you describe it in very real terms. You do feel like Leeds is an entity outside of being purely an environment, you know, so I'm quite excited about that. It sounds like I'm really looking forward to reading it. I was before, like, but now I really am.
A lot of this takes place in the calls, and relationships are built up, new relationships are built up over the course of the book, and people might find the ending rather interesting. I'll say no more about that.
Oh, you tease!
And there's acknowledgements to Leeds Libraries and to Leeds Book Club.
Thank you so much.
Because you've both been huge supporters, and I'm very, very grateful for that. You know, Leeds has been incredibly supportive of these books, and the book club in particular. So it's about time you got some acknowledgement.
I think that I have done very well out of knowing you, but I can't claim any. It was pure luck. I think I got in at the beginning, and the reviews that you had for Cold Cruel Winter were just spectacular, and it just seems to be, you know, the series seems to be taking off. But of course Leeds is supportive. You reflect the city in a very honest and I think very warm way. I mean, you haven't lived here for a while, but clearly it is very prominent in your heart.
Oh, it is, and you know, always will be. We're moving back there in a year, just over a year. So although the impetus for that's my partner's, not mine, because her daughter lives up there. And but I think you're right about Leeds as a character. The environment itself is vital, and I want the books to be immersive experiences. I want people to come out of the book feeling like they've spent the last few hours in Leeds with all the sights and particularly the smells. So that's highly important to me.
Yeah. And I think the fact that while the city itself has changed so much, the names of streets and things like that remain the same really does ground it in the city that, you know, I live in right now, 300 years on.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the layout of the streets within the city centre, say from the Hedgerow down to the river, is in great part as it was in the 18th century, and that helps a lot, I think. Also, it was very important that each book have a map as well, to let people see and experience it that way. When I was up in Leeds last weekend, I gave my son the sort of brief Richard Nottingham tour of the city, and we're standing on Kirkgate just by Zara, and I just pointed out to him and said, well, that's where the jail would have been, and right next to it on the corner there was the White Swan Inn. And he said, I'll never be able to come down here again without seeing those places. And I thought, well, that's what I want.
Perfect.
You know, it's, they're as real to me as any building that's standing there now.
And yeah.
Sadly, there's very, very little of 18th century Leeds left.
I think in an industrial city, well, I suppose anywhere over that period of time, it's think the landscape does just change so utterly, doesn't it? I mean, I've been living in Leeds now for 11 years, and on the Beyond Guardian Leeds website today, a woman had, well, I don't know who it was actually, I just said a woman, but I don't know, a tweeter had... had posted a blog about the city that she used to live in, and she's sort of going through the city and mentioning shops that have closed and pubs that have changed, and you know, the Corn Exchange, how different all of that is now. And even though I haven't lived here all that long, you know, you can't help yourself but like you start to superimpose the new Leeds on top of the old one. But the, as you say, it remains in your head, like it's still so relevant. And I find it peculiar that like you can manage to evoke the same effect despite the fact that you're describing a landscape so far ago, you know, time-wise.
Well, I try, is about what I can say. Because I see it in my head when I'm writing, so all of what I'm doing when I'm writing is just writing down the movie that's going on in my head. It's nothing more than that. So
it's obviously a very visual sort of thing for you anyway.
Yeah, it is. And it's completely alive to me. And has been from the first book. I think in some ways, although I probably wouldn't want to actually live there, it's a more attractive place to me than Leeds in 2012. Although I think I better be careful using 2012 because I believe that's been trademarked.
Oh, for God, yes, duh, yes. Our glorious experience is leaving a sour taste in the mouths of a lot of people. You've been, I mean, one of the things that I really love about the books is the fact that there's nothing static. Things change so quickly. Characters come in and out of the books. Characters that play very prominent roles, you know, come in and out of the books in a way that leaves it very unpredictable. And you've been notoriously coy about how you project the series going. Can you tell us whether there's a book after this, or are we approaching the end?
I'm going to say there is another Leeds book that comes after Come the Fear, because I've just sent it off to my publisher. Whether it actually involves Richard Nottingham or not, I'm not going to say at the moment. And
fair enough.
You're going to read book four to understand that a bit more. But a couple of people, my agent and my editor, who's also a good friend of mine, have read book five and actually think it's better than Come the Fear and Cold Cruel Winter.
Like, I appreciate that you know you've obviously put an awful lot of work into this. What I find so staggering is that there are rumours going around that you've just started a new series as well.
Well, I haven't just started. I mean, later this year, the first book in a new three-book series set in Seattle is coming out as an audiobook and ebook. And it's interesting because I had two offers on that. One to come out in print and the other as an ebook and audio book, and I actually chose the ebook route, although it's not self-published at all.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a series that runs from three books that take place in 1988, 1994, and 2000. I lived in Seattle for 20 years, so I know the city well, and all very involved in the music scene there. I was a music journalist there, so for once I'm sort of writing what I know, but with one big change. The main character is a music journalist, but it's a she.
Ah, how are you finding that? I mean, it must put a lot of you must look back on a lot of your own experiences as a music journalist and kind of go, oh yeah, that would work. But wait, well, if I was a woman, yeah, it would be very, very different.
It's interesting because I wrote the book first with a male lead, and when the ebook publisher I'm working with said they wanted it, they said, how would you feel about making the main character female? Now, they had a perfectly good commercial rationale, because one of the women at the company is American. She does an awful lot of audiobook narration. So they have someone right on hand to do the audiobook.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, that could make it really interesting. But of course, it alters every dynamic in the book. So it was an interesting rewrite, and certainly getting me in touch with my feminine side.
And you do love a challenge.
I do, actually, and I feel it's added so much to the book. I think it's done a great deal to make it more alive and more interesting.
Well, I suppose you'd worked out the mechanics of the story, but going back, it gives it a completely fresh feeling for you as a writer, as well as, you know...
It does, and there are a lot of very interesting things, you know, going to be going on in the series. Some of which mirror my life, and some of which take it into other areas. So it's... And, I mean, 1988 I chose deliberately because it's before the whole Seattle music thing broke.
Yeah.
But it's at a time when Seattle was being named the most livable city in America, and people were starting to flock there from California. But the actual music scene itself was still largely underground.
Yeah.
And 1994... of course, brought Kurt Cobain's suicide.
Yeah, I was just going to say you've skirted the time frame. I would have thought when you think of Seattle, you kind of think from 90 to 94, don't you? You know.
Yeah, and I mean it's, you know, the start of 94, Seattle was still massive because obviously it was Nirvana and Pearl Jam, Soundgarden was still huge. So, I mean, three of the top bands in the world at that time were out of this city.
Yeah.
And all these musicians were flocking there, hoping to be spotted. And
tap into that.
I mean, you really couldn't walk around downtown Seattle without seeing some guy carrying a guitar case and wearing a backwards baseball hat. So it was... Those were interesting times. But... You know, there's so much other music that's always been coming out of Seattle as well. But the music community was still very much a village. You could go to... I remember going to see John Martin play there. And all of Pearl Jam turned up because Jeff Ament, the bassist, was a huge fan. He brought everybody else along.
Yeah.
And Eddie Vedder got really bored and spent... all his time in the lobby of the venue on the payphone.
Oh my God.
So you ran into people and you knew people, and The Rocket, which is the main music magazine, which has a role in these books, hosted parties every year, and there'd be all these all musicians turning up, and everybody would sit around talking, drinking, what have you.
Yeah.
And in 2000 there was an earthquake in Seattle. And it's also the year The Rocket closed, so these are I picked these years quite deliberately.
There's a thread that runs through.
Uh-huh.
Mm. Very exciting. Do you know when the first one of that is due to come out?
We haven't come up with a date yet. I just got the editor's notes back today, so it's going to take me a little while to work on those.
Oh, of course, of course.
And then I'm also 12,000 words into another mystery that's set in Leeds, but it's set during the Civil War.
For those people in the audience who happen to not be of English extraction, could you clarify when exactly that was again?
Well, it's basically the first Civil War was 1642, 1645, then you've got 1647, 1649. And this is 1645 when Cromwell's troops, the Roundheads, are basically finally taken and kept Leeds, which was... And the economy was wrecked because of the fighting over the last couple of years. It had changed hands a few times.
Yeah.
The city was kind of a wreck from all the fighting. And also in March, plague came, and plague lasted for the rest of the year. So again, this is, if I interest anybody in it, it's going to be a 3-book series that covers that year.
Hmm.
The murder mysteries as well. So.
Oh, I was just going to say, and you said that there's a mystery on top of it, because I have to admit that just the I know it's very sparse, but the images that you've painted there are fascinating in and of themselves.
It's a city very much in shades of greys and browns to me at that time.
Mm.
But you know, we'll see how it develops, and I want to get that written. I want to get the second book in the Seattle series written, and sometime early next year I'm going to be writing the 6th book in the Leeds series, which I suspect is going to run to probably 7, maybe 8 books in total for the series.
Yeah. So the end is nigh, but not soon.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know how it's going to end, but I'm not saying anything.
It's the J.K. Rowling thing all over again.
Maybe so, yeah. Except he's not going to grow up and get married.
Oh, you say that now. That'll be the big twist.
But, I have an idea for what I want to do in book 6.
Yeah.
So it keeps gnawing at me a little bit, which doesn't make me happy because I have other things I want to do, and...
Yeah.
Having just finished one, I want to take a break before I start the next one, so...
They sound a little bit like alien invaders, do you know what I mean? They're all battling away inside of your head, waiting for one to take root.
To a degree, yeah, yeah. But, I've had a couple of false starts on the Civil War book, and this time I think I know... it feels right, so it's, we'll see how it goes. And then there's and yet another book that's out there with publishers at the moment through my agent that's set in Chesterfield in the 14th century.
Dear God, man, where do you find the time?
I just write every day.
It sounds like you write every minute of every day. Or maybe I'm just not a terribly productive person.
I just plug away every day. I mean, that's the secret of it,
yeah.
Really. I mean, probably my biggest thrill this year was I've got to know Joanne Harris a little bit through Twitter, and she was up in Chesterfield doing an event for her new book, which is wonderful, and I would recommend everybody reads Peaches for Monsieur le Curé.
Mm.
And I got to meet her and got an autographed copy of a new book and gave her a copy of The Broken Token. 2 days later, she tweeted that she was reading it in the bath and she was hooked.
Oh, that's so... That must have been a dream.
It was such a thrill for me because I've loved her writing for quite a long time now, and to have someone I hugely admire say that about my work is was wonderful.
You must have been... I'd be over the moon.
And this is probably a good time to plug the book launch before Come the Fear, which will be in Leeds.
Ooh.
And it's going to be at Holy Trinity Church.
God, you're hitting all of the high points, really, aren't you? I don't think I've actually been there for years.
Now Trinity Arts.
Yeah.
It looks, I'll know for sure next week, but it's looking very much as if it's going to be the 14th of September, which is a Friday evening.
Mm-hmm.
There will probably be actors doing readings from the book. Going to have some good folk musicians on hand, and a couple of very good storytellers who are going to lend their services. So there will be stories relating to Leeds, and also since one of my good friends is a traditional Jewish storyteller, relating to the Jewish community in Leeds, which in itself is not relevant to the book.
No, but... But it all creates that...
It promises to be a good multimedia evening.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's something for everybody there.
That's what I'm aiming at. It's, you know, I'd like it to be one of those events that is not po-faced, but an entertainment. You know, people will come back from that feeling like they've been to a gig, and for some people it'll be the first time they've been exposed to good storytelling.
Yeah.
And maybe get some people hooked a little bit on storytelling too, because people really should be. I done well is fantastic, and I've learned a lot from storytellers I've worked with.
Yeah. Well, I know that it's been something you've been passionate about for a while, and I have to admit I'm terribly ignorant about the whole process, but I've just checked in my calendar. I'm not doing a book club. I'll be able to come. I'm really excited.
Well, I'd love to have you there, and in fact, I think it would be a really good place to promote Leeds Book Club as well.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'd just be floating around bouncing, bouncing with excitement for everything. Well, but it's, I mean,
I
it just...
Leeds Book Club there as well, so it's...
As I say, I've already put it into the diary as you were chatting there, so I'm booked. But no, I mean, I know nothing about the storytelling tradition, but I have huge respect for, like, our oral history, and it feels to me like they're very much tied in together, and it's something we seem to have placed a different emphasis on our stories. I mean, like, I always think the Kindle book argument is not Kindle, e-readers in general, argument against paperbacks is really interesting, because I don't care what medium my story comes to me in, as long as I get the story.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think having a storyteller event, it just sounds so much more personal, you're less a passive audience and you're more part of the process, and I think that sounds really exciting, you know?
Well, I mean, you come from a country with a very strong tradition of storytelling.
Mm.
And really, the country, England does not have a great oral storytelling tradition. And the general theory for this is where the native language and customs were suppressed, the oral tradition is stronger, because that was the only way people could keep it going.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it makes complete sense.
That will hopefully be a revelation for people. And folk music is involved in these books, in my books.
Yeah.
Mentioned in passing, and I mean, Broken Token, the inspiration for that is from the Broken Token ballads. So the folk process and folklore do play an important part in these. So it's only right that they become involved. There's a possibility, and I don't know if it's more than that at the moment, that maybe one, maybe more of the members of Bellowhead might show up to play. But that's just...
pure speculation.
Anything else at the moment. But there'll still be some very good musicians there.
Just what you were saying there about the Broken Token, and I know that yourself and myself have talked about sort of music and the the songs, but also the style, I think, and how it does seem to have wove its way through the three books and the Richard Nottingham books that I've read so far. But was that, I mean, now obviously you're quite involved. I know music's been a big part of your life, but was the folk tradition, by which I mean folk music storytelling, was all that something that you did anyway, or is it something that's kind of emerged as you've becoming a fiction writer?
Not so much the storytelling. I'm not a storyteller, I'm a writer. And I think there's a big distinction between the two, because a storyteller, stories change a little bit each time you tell them.
Yeah.
With writing, it's fixed on the page. But music, yeah, I mean, going back, I was a musician, I had been for many years, just for fun, not for a living. And folk music has always been important to me. And I've absorbed a lot of that. I have books and books and books of collected folk songs and done countless interviews with folk musicians.
And it's something that's,
so it's
I mean, it's something that seems to be going through a bit of a resurgence at the moment. There are so many, particularly female vocalists, I think, but there are so many young emerging voices in folk music in England today that it seems to be a very exciting time to like folk.
There are. You're right. It has undergone a renaissance, I think, and I'm very pleased to see that. And it's being used in different forms as well. Some very exciting young musicians around, and folk. I mean, you know, each country has its folk tradition, and I've done a lot of writing on Danish folk music, and what's going on there with young musicians is just fantastic. But a lot of these big ballads, you find all across Europe. They travelled.
Yeah.
And I actually remember doing an academic paper on why some of these ballads have survived. And I think in rural societies where people were loath to get the law involved, and there might not have been much law,
yeah,
where someone had broken a social taboo, they would use these ballads as a way of saying, we know. Singing these is how we know, and it's kind of our way of castigating you.
Yeah, yeah.
The power of these pieces, and the fact that they've been honed over hundreds of years, so it's like a piece of wood that's been just sort of rubbed and rubbed and rubbed and rubbed over centuries until it's so beautifully smooth and honed that it's just perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
So, to me, they have real power, and to a degree, they've had an influence. I mean, there's a particular ballad that is the inspiration, to give more away than that. You'll have to read it to find out. But,
So as soon as the book comes out, if anybody wants to tweet me and let me know what your guesses to the song are, I'll pass them all on to you.
So it's... You know, that's an explicit way of using folk song, much as I did in The Broken Token, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm pleased with the book. I can't say it's perfect, because if I was ever completely satisfied with it, it would be time to give up writing totally.
Yeah, or start writing in French like Samuel Beckett did.
yeah, something like that. you know. Move to Paris and become an existentialist.
Well, I mean, somebody's got to.
Or maybe I'll move to Leeds and become an existentialist.
Hey, I like that plan better.
It's, you know, can do a new blog, The Existentialist at Elland Road or something like that. But maybe not.
Possibly not. We'll have to see.
Yeah. I mean, if we get the promised new owners, then maybe after I move up, I will actually...
Oh, I saw you. I thought you were going to... I saw that you you were tweeting one of... well, a guy I've only met the once, but it was at your book launch at Leeds Libraries earlier... Was it this year? Was that this year?
Yeah, it was at the start of this year, Mick McCann.
Yeah, and I saw that... I thought
the Encyclopedia of Leeds is well worth reading.
I've been following him, I believe, for some time now. He's hysterically funny on Twitter, so it's another one of those that's gone into the to-be-read pile, which is now bigger than I am.
Actually, that sounds like the beanstalk in my front yard. Which has developed the most gorgeous flowers that are such a dark red that they're almost black. It's the colour of dried blood. It's fantastic.
You have a fantastic sense of the macabre.
Comes with the territory.
I saw these beautiful flowers. It made me think of dried blood.
Well, that image has actually just occurred to me. So.
Oh, good. That's better.
You have that effect on me.
Oh, well, I think we've just hit the pinnacle of the podcast. Things can't get any better. Chris, as always, thank you so much for joining us. You're absolutely spectacular. And I look forward to seeing you in September for the launch of your new book. But at any other time you're up in Leeds, hopefully I shall be about.